Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's new daily show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on the facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to local officials and experts on COVID-19 and community actions related to it. If you have questions for our guests, please email them to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. Audio from each day's program will be posted on the website.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning into a Friday edition of the Lowdown. I think this is going to be a fun show, just by judging what's happening so far. coping with a new reality. We're all doing it in a variety of different ways, and it's always interesting to hear how specific groups are coping when, by necessity, when their worlds are thrown completely upside down. And today, for our Friday show, we brought in some local teachers who've had to completely adjust what they've been doing and try and maintain connected with their kids during this shutdown. In the studio today, I have Susan Gill, who will be talking about teaching art, Jared Griffin, teaching drama, and on the phone, Laura Beck, one of our local music teachers, talking about teaching music in a time of the COVID pandemic. What they've had to do to try and be successful, what they're doing now, what they see, what's going to happen in the future, those are all some of the things we might touch on this morning, depending on where the conversation leads. If you have a question for one of our local teachers, the usual, email or call, and we'll try and get the question posed to one of our guests and get it answered by the end of the show. Morning. Welcome all.
Morning.
Good morning. I love what you've done with the place.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, right. I knew this was going to be an improv kind
of
show.
You've hired a crack team.
Yeah, right. All right, let's go around the table first and talk a little bit so you can introduce yourself and we'll start with you, Ms. Gill.
All righty. I'm Susan Gill. I've been teaching art at the high school for 5 years. Before that, I was over at the elementaries where I taught 1 year at East and 8 years at Peterson.
Art teaching.
Actually, at the elementaries, I was in the classroom. At the high school, art.
Pam's telling me we need to give you a little more volume.
Doing third and fourth grade, mostly.
Third and fourth grade. Jared?
Hi, I'm Jared Griffin, and I am here as the drama coach for the secondary level. I've been doing the middle school drama program for, oh gosh, coming up will be, I think, my ninth season with them, and then moving into my third season with the high school drama club. They have named themselves the Shakespeares. You might be familiar with.
I've seen them.
The Shakespeares, yeah.
I've seen them, Shakespeares. And Laura, good morning.
Good morning. I am Laura Beck, and I teach secondary choir in Kodiak, so middle school and high school choirs.
Well, your worlds have all changed a lot. So, you know, have any of you had any experience previously teaching children, you know, your particular disciplines in the past before the shutdown happened?
Teaching online?
Online, teaching in a, you know.
No.
No.
I had just a little bit of experience. The music department has been teaching VTC, which means virtual teleconference or video teleconferencing, to the village schools for a long time now. And so I had the opportunity to do piano for a couple years that way. It was a different system. And I think actually our technology is better now, but I do have a little bit of experience.
Was it successful?
For the most part, it's an individual type thing. So for piano, it's an individual thing. Now, when we're going to talk about choir in just a minute, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah. Okay. So things start to shut down around February, March, you know, or you get an idea that things are going to shut down. What kind of things go through your brain of, how am I going to start delivering this content to kids in a place where I'm not going to be in a room with a kid?
Yeah, that was a real big concern because teaching art, a lot of the teaching happens during the process of creating. And, you know, how was I going to do that? Knowing that they weren't all going to be able to get on at the same time sometimes, knowing that the video was going to be kind of glitchy, was I going to try and teach it directly on BlueJeans? And what I ended up coming up with is setting up a stream channel where I created tutorials so that they could go at any time they needed to, and they can rewatch the videos on the art technique anytime they needed to. And that seemed to work well in delivering that kind of instruction, except for, you know, that process part still was very, very difficult, not being able to be there as they were creating.
Is art collaborative between the other kids in the class with the kids in the class, or is it just one-on-one between you and the kid?
Oh, definitely collaborative. We work towards that. In Art 1, there's probably less collaboration because they're still shy and not confident in their artwork, but by the time they get to advanced art or AP art, I'm depending a lot on the other students to work with each other. And they really do help each other out and give each other advice. So that was definitely missing as well. We tried to do as much as we could online for our critiques with the advanced students. And they did get on, but some of them were working. Some of them couldn't come. So it was a much smaller group.
So you have the technological challenges that all of you are probably going to have to face, that everybody has had to have technological challenges in regards to whether or not they have the time and whether or not they have the technology and whether they have the skill to deal with that platform, right?
Right.
So you've had experience, though, teaching or taking classes online.
Yes.
So, but you haven't had to sit in the chair of providing the instruction across. So how do you, what kind of resources are out there to help you at the high school level create content, really, or create instruction for kids?
What we were looking at, I had a student teacher at the time, Brendan Harrington, so he and I were talking and discussing what kind of projects could we give to them that would both be beneficial for art as well as their mental health. Because these type of classes that we're taking in the arts really are about, a lot about mental health. So we were doing projects that would have them learning about an artist like Andy Goldsworthy and going out and creating. We were trying to get them outside. We did a photography assignment in which they had to really focus on the positive things that were happening in their life at this time. Different subject matters like that. As far as giving delivery of the instruction, we did a lot with PowerPoint where we'd have them come on and we'd walk through the steps so that they could see what we wanted them to do. We did a lot of videos through stream where they could watch videos of certain artists and as well as watch tutorials that we created. So it was a lot of work. I learned quite a bit with technology this last couple months because I've never been a tech person and definitely learned a lot.
So let's bounce to music and talk a little bit about, you know, how you know, if you got piano already sort of in your holster there, you got a rudimentary idea of how you're going to deliver that, but what happens to you as a choir teacher?
Right. Choir inherently builds connectivity and helps singers to be able to connect. So doing that online was definitely a challenge. Like Susan said, the internet access, that we've got to ensure equitable access for all kids. That's a whole other thing. But the internet access was pretty challenging. And there's latency issues. And by latency, that means if I'm speaking to you right now, you're not hearing me the exact, you know, millisecond after I'm speaking. There's a little bit of a lag time. And so everybody's connection is different. So we're not able to sing synchronously. However, there's lots and lots and lots of ways that we were able to connect and do music together. We actually turned off our microphones. I had the kids turn off all their microphones and we went through and did our warm-ups and different things. They could hear me, but I couldn't hear them singing back, but we had all our video cameras on. So we tried some things like that to do that together. And we also did some outreach projects. So hopefully some people listening were recipients of some of those outreach projects where the kids went out and interviewed an elder about what kind of music that elder liked or and listened to. And it opened up some really great conversations. I loved reading those reports because it opened up some really great conversations between kids and either their grandparents or an elder in the community. Or else the student could go and sing to somebody, you know, and just share their art with somebody else. But there are definitely some challenges. But like you said, there's so many things, or I think Jared mentioned, there's so many things being developed right now. There are so many different applications out in the broader world that are being developed to help musicians be able to participate together and make music together online. So I've spent a lot of time doing research and spent a lot of time learning new things and how to do new things. It causes you to be creative. You know, when we're in the creative arts, it causes us to be even more creative when we have to try to figure out a way to do this online. That connectivity piece is so important. It's not something you can send an assignment and say, okay, do this, and then not see the students for another week. I don't think that's very effective. So, but doing different things to keep the kids engaged, to keep them meeting online. As Susan said, we did lose a lot of kids toward the end because it was just exhausting for them. So we have to come up with some ways to figure out how to keep student engagement up and keep them connected.
Well, I'm interested in the social component of this. You know, you mentioned creative process and the mental health that's associated with this. With the arts in general, how do you, you know, I think there's a lot of value in having the kids in a room all at the same time. So mm-hmm. how do you create that on a video platform?
There are some elements that you definitely lose without being in person. However, we've already created in our classrooms, we've already created a safe space for kids, and we already have some routines that we do with kids. For example, in my classes, every day, every class, we spend 2 minutes sharing good things. And that means just, it could be anything. Hey, I had a great meal today. Hey, so-and-so gave me a compliment today, or I'm just in a good, you know, whatever, somebody gave me whatever their good thing for the day was, and kind of start off the class with positivity. So that's one thing that was very easy to carry over online. And the students are really eager to share about themselves and really eager to share good things. And they got excited about hearing other things from other kids. So we did that in the classroom, and that was just one example of something that we could carry over online and continue to do. You lose out the acoustic, the physical acoustic benefit of music. Like there's something super special about, music in person and acoustic music. You actually feel it. You know, when you're singing together in a group, there's sound sensations that you have that actually give you good feelings, you know, when you're singing together. There's so much research about the benefits, the health benefits of singing together in person, and that there's even some suggestion that, you know, at some point your hearts start syncing up. You know, you're breathing at the same rate of pace, you're exhaling and producing sound, phonating at the same rate. And so there's some actual physical connection that happens there. I can't recreate that online, right? Because that's a physical acoustic thing. But until we can get back together, we've got to do everything that we can to help kids be able to connect with each other. Some days we would just talk. If they were having a particularly bad day, you know, because there were some definite ups and downs throughout this process this spring. And so if I sensed that there were some, you know, some low emotions that day, we would talk about that. That's something that we would talk about online. And I was very surprised at how many students were willing to share together online in that situation. So that's with the groups, you know, that's with groups that have already had that in-person connection to begin with. The challenge for me in the fall is going to be connecting with a whole new group of students. You know, how do I start building that to begin with? So that's, you know, that's a challenge that I'm exploring and trying to figure out how to, Jared was talking about recruiting. How do I bring in these new kids, you know, and help them to feel a part of that group and help them to connect. So that's something that I'm still researching and exploring. We're fortunate, again, even though that we're isolated on Kodiak Island, but all of us have professional organizations and colleagues throughout the country that we can connect with in this manner online, or we can pick up the phone and go, hey, what are you doing about this? We're not alone in this situation, you know? So I keep seeing commercials and hearing things on the radio, and it says alone together, which I kind of hate, but it's true. we're not isolated. Even though we're on an island, we can reach out, and we're so blessed in this time that we have technology that we can reach out and see what other people are doing and make more connections. I have found myself having way more conversations and at much more depth than I have in just a normal time of teaching. So again, it's a growing time for us. So learning how to help people stay connected in this format is an ongoing process.
There's a lot of questions that just came out from there, but I'm gonna go to drama first and talk drama. A little bit with drama.
Yes, everything that Susan and Laura just said. So I have I'm in a little different situation. I'm not, you know, a teacher. I'm technically a coach, so I didn't have to worry about class meeting times and grades and participation. I did have to worry about participation and attendance, but whenever I brought the club together, either for a virtual meeting online or when we had a couple kids in here to record some things, when they saw each other, they didn't say to each other, wow, I miss doing drama with you. I miss doing plays with you. They just said, yeah, I missed you.
Yeah.
And we teach, you know, the technical thing we teach, we teach elements of aesthetics to our kids. But what Laura was alluding to is we also, there's also a synesthetic element to what we do. Yeah. It's that physical component, it's that olfactory component, it's the tactile component, it's visual, and all, you know, it's all of those things. And we cut off, you know, moving online, you know, we cut off half of that synesthetic experience. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's what they really, really missed. And so it's trying to recreate or keep those relations, at least for the drama, keeping those relationships going. We're a club, and so we have to survive year to year. You know, we have to have enough kids to keep the club going every year. So that was our focus those last 10 weeks and on into the summer, was how can we keep that sense of community going and also try to build what we can and still think about building the program even more.
So how much of your program actually did have to transfer into, you know, online meetings?
Well, you know, all of it, you know, those last 10 weeks, we were able, you know, thankfully, you know, in February, we were able to compete at state and obliterate every other school at state. We were able to, yeah, we were able in only our second year. And then that following week, we were able to do a record-breaking production called Puffs with the Middle School Drama Club. And then it was like a week after that, so we were riding high. The club was riding really, really high. We were getting ready for our showcase. We're getting ready to do a musical at the end. And it was just, you know, it's like the rug pulled out, you know, from under you. So I have also a full-time job outside of that I had to tend to. And so I knew that we weren't going to be able to create theatrical productions, you know, online. So we shifted just a little bit, or not a little bit, but we shifted a lot to, there are other elements of theater that we haven't really focused on. And that's like the entrepreneurship, the business, the production. And that's kind of what we shifted to. So those first couple of weeks we went to, like over spring break, we did an online screenwriting or playwriting contest for kids in the school district, that gave us time to kind of research how can we do a talent drama showcase online. We moved all of our meetings online. They started to explore grant opportunities, which allowed us to do the podcast. So I got them the executive. We designated an executive committee to start planning the next year and doing some dramaturgical work to research plays for a possible season, the next season. So I was able to kind of show them or work with them on those elements of theater. So they're still working on it, but still not getting that, you know, the synesthetic part of it. But so far, we're still rolling.
We're still rolling.
Still rolling. And we do have a season tentatively planned for next year. But
there's classes and then there's clubs, right? There is an art club.
Yes.
And is there the choir? Are there music classes in the school? And then the choir is a separate function?
The choirs are classes in school. And then we have, yeah, but we do have extracurricular competitions that we participate in. We also usually do well at ASAA events. And we were gearing up for a solo ensemble mm-hmm. competition, but it had to be canceled due to the restrictions. So, but there is an extracurricular component to that as well.
So from the beginning of a school year, when you have a new set of kids come in, how long does it usually take for them to become a unique group, you know, that learns to trust each other and they become sort of a cohesive class where, you know, you build those relationships to where you know and you're in a safe place? I mean, does it happen right away or does it take a couple of months Mm-mm. for that?
It takes a few months and it takes a lot of work at the beginning to all those icebreakers and all those activities that you do to get them to talk to each other and start trusting each other, especially in the arts, because, you know, they're putting themselves out there. You know, mm-hmm. it's personal. When you draw something, when you sing something, when you perform, it's very personal. And you got to feel like you can trust the people around you to really express yourself.
And we have, there's a cohort that the three of us share. There are several kids who are in art and or in music and or doing drama and or doing band and orchestra. And you can tell, you know, what Susan was just saying, that they take that trust with them to the different activities and different classes. And that that is really cool and also speaks to synesthesia also. But and I don't know if you necessarily would see that in a bigger school. And I think it has worked really, really well for at least the kids in the drama department or the drama productions and competitions.
So
go ahead.
Sorry. Music classes generally have larger populations, like larger class sizes. And so it is challenging too, but it's super cool when that moment happens, right, Susan? Like when you get to that place where the kids take a risk and they're like encouraging of each other and trusting of each other. So it's built into what we do, like inherently. We built, you know, we purposefully at the beginning of the year start that process.
And I think
it's really fun.
We're
it's
really,
fun to watch.
Really lucky as arts teachers in that we get to take our students. I can have students for all 4 years.
And by mm-hmm.
and by mm-hmm. the time you've got them as seniors, they're your kids. And there's such a trust and it's such a bond there.
Absolutely.
So how concerned are you for the future, though, 2 or 3 years down the road when you've had to change how they perform? I mean, I think this year we're somewhat lucky because you had six or seven months, right, for them to build those relationships.
Yep.
But now we're going to go into a new year maybe without having that advantage, right? I mean, you got – recruiting for all of you might be limited, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may be limited, but I still think it's really important. I think it's vital for us to keep doing what we're doing and keep offering what we're offering to the students. I think it would be even more devastating if we don't have that opportunity. You know, it's going to be hard, but there are different models, you know, being examined, and I hope that the arts are going to be included in those models for the students. So while it's going to be a challenge to do it, but I feel like it's urgent and vital that we do it. I think it's so important that we make the effort to do the recruiting and to do that trust building, yeah, it's going to be hard. We have to try new things and explore new possibilities. And again, rely on our colleagues, you know, rely on each other and our colleagues to be able to get this, you know, try to make these efforts. Like Susan said, having students multiple years is really great. So we have those students already that can help pull forward traditions. If we're in this situation for, you know, 5 or 10 years, that's a whole other story. But if we've only got a year or two to go, it's going to be uphill, but I think it's a worthwhile endeavor for us to try.
And there's a strong correlation to athletics too, because a lot of kids in school would be lost in school without athletics. And yep. We have several kids who would be lost in school without the arts. I mean, school would just be, I mean, school's already meaningless probably, but to many of them, hey, I'm being real here.
Aren't you an academic?
I am, but I'm a descriptive academic, not a prescriptive. So I just tell you what I see. School is hard. School is a waste of time. And if it wasn't for music, drama, and visual arts, you know, there's no telling, you know. It motivates the kids, especially those participating in competition, to work on their academics. And so, you know, one thing that is a little troubling to me is I think that the school district is considering, you know, if there is some kind of outbreak and we do have to go completely online, that they are going to only focus on the core academic subjects, math, English, science, social studies, and completely get rid of arts and CTE programs. And that's if there's an outbreak. That's, I think they're calling it a level red or something like that. If we have to go to red, the arts are completely done away with until the outbreak is over. So that's troubling to me. I see Laura's like wanting to say that's just what they're planning. That's not in stone yet, but yeah, that, so we need to communicate that just as athletics keeps kids in and involved in school, so do the arts. So, you know, if we get to that level red area, no, we've got to figure this out. We can't just get rid of these things that are considered icing on the cake, you know, but that are actually fundamental to, you know, students' development and academic learning and success too.
They're not icing. It's like part of the cake. We're an ingredient of the cake. What was the first thing that people started turning to when we're doing all this stuff at home? What were you seeing? What did you see happening? Artists coming on and doing outreach things from their homes, you know? Athletes doing things, you know, different people reaching out. It wasn't, I mean, no offense. I am a strong believer in school. Okay. So, and in core classes, obviously those are so important, but for life, what we do is so important. That's why I was like making so many faces while Jared was talking. Cause I'm like, yes, we have to have them.
I personally watch the math teacher YouTubes. Those are my
favorite. Right? Yeah. So, no. Love to you guys, math teachers, if you're listening.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
We need you for music. We have to.
Oh, yes.
So. Yeah. How do you keep that going? I mean, is there any advantages to an online platform? Long term. I mean, long term. Are you learning things now that you know you could use in a regular curriculum when things return to normal?
I'm going to say that I have developed a much higher skill of in recording and doing some editing and recording online, and I've learned some different software programs that I didn't even know existed. And again, they may be new to give to kids as tools to help them be able to explore creative process recording, and it doesn't cost anything. It's like free for them. I think there's been a benefit to me and probably to all of the teachers is that we've learned a little bit more, and there's being more and more technology is being developed to do things. So, but not just technologically, it's also enabled us to focus on different aspects of our of our subject, like Jared was saying, looking at different things. Like for me, looking at, okay, how can I bring in some more recording type of things for these kids? It's real life. It's where they live. They love doing YouTubes or TikToks or whatever. So being able to add that in maybe to my curriculum, I think has been, I'm losing my words this morning. Sorry. Beneficial is not the right word, but I think it's been a good thing to be able to look at. So some of those things have been great for me. Again, I'm not trying to downplay the challenges because there've been a lot of challenges. It's been hard. I cried a lot. I don't know about y'all, but I cried, you know, if not daily, weekly, because it was so hard. But I don't know, Bill, I'm going to say it again, and I'm sorry I sound like a talking head here, but arts builds connectivity. It enables our students to contribute their offerings to a bigger thing, you know, something that's bigger than themselves. And everybody, society, our community benefits from that. They benefit from the aesthetics of it. They benefit from the connection of it. They benefit from the diversity of it. So I you can tell that we're pretty passionate about this, but I think that it's core.
There are a variety probably of different scenarios that are being planned out now for how to proceed in the next school year. Are you all involved in that process in any way?
There is a committee that's working on it, and we have been able to express our opinions in email, and I know that I've personally done that as well and sent some ideas I had. So they're taking in consideration everything. I would not want to be the person having to make this decision. You know, it affects so many people.
Right.
Absolutely. I've forwarded, there's been some, I was talking about research and things that are happening like as we speak. I forwarded the American Choral Directors Association did instructional models for us. Like they just boom, knocked it out. In 3 weeks, a committee on that did instructional models for different levels, different scenarios of choir and other music. TMEA is the Music Educators Association, not TMEA, sorry, National Music Educators Association is also working on some recommendations and some instructional models. So I'm forwarding everything. Everything I get, I'm sending on. So again, I would not want to be the person making decisions. I agree with Susan. I appreciate all of our board members and committee members that are working on these things, but...
Well, if you're already working online, what is, you know, as you prepare to go into the next school year, what kind of plans are you making? Are you going to just continue doing what you're doing right now, or are there? I'm from talking to each of you, it's obvious that there's more resources than you have time to deal with right now of trying to interact with things, but you know. Summer's just half over already, and it seems like we need to kind of get ready for what's coming.
I'm currently teaching a summer enhancement program with middle schoolers, and I'm actually teaching reading and art. And I have smaller groups for half an hour, and we're face-to-face, so the groups are only 8 or 9, and we all have our screens open, and we're all interacting, and it's so different than what I did during the high school year. I feel so much more connected with these kids. So what I would like to do is be able to do smaller groups for a short amount of times where I can have them all on. Parents have signed up for this summer enhancement program, so therefore the kids are willing to show up. We had the trouble with the high schoolers that we were just missing so many of them not logging in. So being able to give all of the information to all the students was very difficult. But I would like to do smaller groups, to be able to have more face time, to be able to connect in the process of what they're doing and talk to each other. So, you know, personally, if we can't be in the classroom and literally with the students face to face, that's how I would like to do it.
Over in theater, there are, you know, many different things. You know, there are a couple of schools down south who are already, regardless of what next year looks like, they're already going to start integrating film into the theater program. acting for film, writing for film, directing for film, things like that. And we even did a little bit of that when we did our showcase, which was a presentation on Zoom of all of our kind of award-winning competition pieces that we had this past year. And we talked a lot about acting to the camera. And even I had to do research, and I was never trained to act, you know, to a camera. And so so that's already kind of changing what the program would and could look like. You know, we've planned our season for next year, which is, you know, kind of what we've already done. Next year is going to be a Shakespeare year, so we're hoping to do some plays, maybe a Shakespeare in the Park for Crabfest, along with competition. But we also kind of have this plan B in the back of our heads, which is to do some things with film and digital theater. You know, theaters around the world were very quick to release digital recordings of their productions. The digital theater, the Royal Shakespeare Company, the Globe, there's this theater in Germany with a really long name that starts with S that I can't remember that have done some really cool things. And so that, you know, that has opened up this idea of when we do productions now, should we also be thinking about filming them, or what goes into that? So we're kind of researching that. And then the podcast. We got a grant to work on this podcast, which is Jared Talks to Teens. And you can subscribe on Apple iTunes or what's the other one? I can't remember the other one. TuneIn is the other one. Anyway, it's a blast. It's a blast. But it's an improv show, you know. So it keeps the kids creating characters, starting to show them some things with sound engineering and editing for radio, for podcasting. So it's kind of opened up different opportunities that we could take if we need to.
For music, we were I was talking with Dale Locke, the band director, the other day, and he's got some pretty creative ideas on doing some cohesive play. Whether we're in person or online, focusing on basics at the end of the year so we can pivot back and forth as needed. They were talking about the challenge of instruments. Okay, so how do we get instruments in kids' hands? How's that going to happen? But he was being creative and saying, hey, maybe we start as percussionists at the beginning of the year, or maybe that's something we can shift to as needed to get some basics done and get some music literacy and some reading skills built in there. And then everybody can, you know, everybody has a desk or a chair or something that they can use, or pots and pans that they can use for percussion. So and being creative in ways that we can plan for continuity of our learning, and not having to completely shift gears and going back and forth to different ideas, but like planning for being able to pivot in our lessons. So I really respected his thoughts on that.
Teachers work hard.
What? You know,
teachers work really hard.
For all the money.
For all the money, they work hard.
Yeah.
In a normal situation, you work very hard to connect with your kids and do what you do. How much harder is it to do what you're doing now?
Oh my gosh.
That's why I'm laughing.
Like Laura was saying, my husband had to drag me off the computer for dinner too.
Daily.
Yeah. It was so much. And it really opened my eyes though to what are our kids doing? They're online mm-hmm. all the time too. And I know how I was feeling by the end of the day. I was drained and I was just literally sitting on my butt in front of the screen. There was so much more work because you just were trying to recreate what you had in the classroom online. And I think we all struggled so much to try and do that. Lots of hours.
Oh yeah, for sure. I've taught online. I've taught college classes online for, about a decade now. And, taking a class from a face-to-face version to an online version takes so much more time and energy and focus, because if one thing is wrong, then you have to spend all this time kind of fixing it, and you lose FaceTime with your kids, you lose content delivery, you lose discussion because you've got to fix this, you know, this technical thing. So there's so much prep work, so much more prep work that that you have to do, that which, by the way, teachers are not compensated for that extra for that extra prep work, to my knowledge. But I'm just a coach, so I don't know.
You don't get paid anyway.
I get paid a modest an okay stipend, but you know, I'm not gonna complain.
Yeah.
But you know, and some, you know, there's some schools down south, there's some colleges that will pay their faculty, you know, a little extra premium for moving their class and developing online, because it's a different class, it's a brand new class, different delivery, everything, almost everything is new in it, it's a lot of work. That's why I only teach maybe one or two classes, you know, online a semester, just because it's a whole lot more work, and Jared is a lot more lazy than people think.
And I have to give a shout out to our admin and Nicole First, and they were so incredibly supportive of us trying to learn this. We had a huge, steep learning curve, and they were constantly there. I mean, they worked way above and beyond, as well as the teachers, to help us to do what we needed to do.
Well,
Nicole was amazing.
Nicole First and Katrina Stewart also just amazing support to us. And I don't know how much work they were doing, because they were supporting us. So it was phenomenal.
You have experience, you know. I'm thinking the thing that's interesting about this is not something that you normally have to prepare for as a teacher, to think about the presentation part of what you're doing too. Now, you know, you're setting up the YouTube things, and you have to do it in a different way, right? You have to take a whole different physical approach, and you have to learn the tech part of things, but then you have to do the delivery part so that you're effective. I mean, you're already effective if you're in the room and the kid's right in front of you, but it's a different way that you have to be effective, right, if you're on a camera.
Yeah, smaller, shorter chunks of content with more frequent check-ins with students, not just like in the class, but then outside of the class. There's this expectation, at least at the college level, there's this expectation that if I'm teaching a class online, then there's this assumption or expectation that then I am also available 24/7 when I am not in front of you, you know, on the camera in front of you. And so there's that kind of anxiety of wanting to be always available for your students if they have questions and concerns, and then to also be proactive and reach out. Just there's it's, you know, that's something that we do every day face to face, and it's no big deal, but there's that extra work, that extra technical component, that extra distance that makes that work more difficult. It takes more energy to do that kind of work when you've moved into this, especially in these really close hands-on disciplines that we're working with.
Yeah, I know there were a lot of teachers that struggled with work-life balance mm-hmm. during this time, not just arts teachers, but I know a lot of teachers were really working on how do I balance being a parent and teaching my, you know, with my kids being online school as well as teaching online at the same time. So we're learning as we go. Teachers are lifelong learners, you know, again, throwing out some quotes there, but teachers are lifelong learners, and it's what we do, you know. So adjusting, adapting, learning, growing, passing that on to our students, those are actually the skills that are more important for us to be passing on to our kids. So learning how to have that balance, we had to be communicated with, hey, you need to get off the computer, you know, and our administrators had to, you know, we appreciate everything that they did. They said, hey, you guys, you don't have to be available to kids after 10 p.m. at night. You know, you need to set some boundaries. Mm. So because we do want to do that, we do want to reach out and we do want to make sure that they're learning and we do care about them so much. That's not a pat phrase. That's who we are as educators. We care about our kids. And it's, and so learning what the balance is when we're having to do this online is something that we're going to continue to work on and continue to grow in as we do, as we move forward.
Well, I know that you're in a classroom setting. You have a face-to-face opportunity to see what's going on with the kid, and you can intervene and you can help them out. You know, now you're in a distance platform, and you can see it happening that they're dropping out, right? So I imagine there's a lot of load on you to try and reconnect and keep the thing together. How successful have we been in keeping the kids connected? And have you seen trends where, you know, you know that they're not being successful?
I specifically had several students that I was really worried about. And again, we do what we can do, and we refer them on to other people as much as we can to do that. It's heartbreaking to know that school is a safe place for some kids. Okay, let me not cry on the mm-hmm. air. Sorry. School is some kids' safe place, mm-hmm. right? And so we know that there were kids that were struggling. We know that there were kids who are not enjoying life right now. And that's hard. But the counselors have been great. We have a school psych at the high school that works with us who's been really wonderful to help us. Like I actually messaged back and forth with her one day because it got so heavy at one point. I had kids who were openly telling me they were depressed, you know, at some point. So mental health types of issues are things that we're going to need to look at a little bit more, I think, and maybe provide some more support moving forward. I don't have a lot of answers. I just have a lot of, hey, I think this is what we need to look at moving forward. But it's hard. It's heavy. Yeah. But we want to do it. We want to support the kids. So I think that aspect of what we do is probably the hardest for me.
Yeah, I agree with Lauren. The counselors were amazing. I have never emailed and called so many parents and students in yeah. all of my years of teaching than I did those last 2 months. And we worked so hard to keep them connected and find out if they were okay. Even if I got a simple text back from a student saying, yes, I'm okay, even if she didn't turn anything in, I knew she was okay. Like right. Laura says, they are our kids and we care about them way beyond teaching our subject matter. But the counselors were always there. I would email them and say, hey, I haven't seen this person. And they'd be right on it. They'd get back to me. They'd let me know they contacted the parent or whatever. So they worked so tirelessly to stay connected yep. with all of our students. Mm-hmm.
So how are you all faring, though? I mean, you know, it has to be an incredible amount of mental stress on you as well. How do you kind of navigate through this and keep yourselves all sane?
For me, there's there's a lot of anxiety about you know, making sure that the club exists after a year. You know, we have a really strong, you know, group of kids who are helping to carry it forward, but because we are a club, you know, if the season is canceled, we can't travel to compete, we can't perform, there are other things that we can work on. We have to reduce the scale of the projects that we do, which could, you know, reduce the number of kids who are, you know, who were involved or who would even find, you know, things like that. So there's some, you know, anxiety related to that. And so I kind of like work on my mental health by, I hate to bring up the podcast again, but you know, something that a project that we're carrying over the summer, there are a lot of the competitions are moving online. And so there's some retraining on how to act for the camera for competitions that are going to be virtual. And so there's some professional development, for me too. So, So that's, you know, that's kind of like where my anxieties are, I guess, right now is where are we going to be, you know, what is the club going to look like, you know, even next year? And so I've been inspired by what some other production companies are doing, but again, it's a lot more work. But for me, also helping my mental health has actually been watching more theatrical productions online that have been made free virtually on YouTube or the production company's websites, and is really kind of opening me up to, you know, other possibilities now that all of these productions are out from behind their paywall. You know, anybody can watch these. I just watched a play called The Small Island, a 3-hour play of The Small Island that the digital theater did in London, about World War II Jamaican soldiers fighting in the British Army and the racism involved in that. And it was a 3-hour long production, but I was glued to my screen because it was so good. And you learn about production values and things like that. So that keeps me happy.
Yeah. Well, you've got, you have an advantage. I mean, there's a close similarity there between drama and drama on the screen and things that exist like that. Yeah. In the art world, I don't know if there's that kind of, you know, that kind of similarity. You
know? We could bring the visual art students in to look at, is this Martha's Brain on the wall? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Martha's Brain from our production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
No, but I mean, we're talking about sculpting and drawing and, you know, the kinds of things that get kids involved when they're first getting involved in the arts in school. And if you're going into choir, and there is no choir, or you're in a choir and the people are on the screen, it's a different type of environment.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely challenging. I just want to speak about my own personal mental health. I had to reach out for some help. I'm not lying here. And I would encourage any other educators, anybody who's feeling the stress and the burden of what we are doing right now or being asked to do, to reach out if you're starting to feel overwhelmed or if you're having, you know, you don't have to carry it alone. I reached out and I talked to a therapist about once a week on the phone, and that was really, really helpful to me to have a perspective outside of my own brain and outside of what I was doing, you know, just kind of zooming out a little bit because we're so focused in and we're spending so much time on online and doing what we're doing. So zooming out a little bit and talking to somebody. And so I want to just really encourage, and this goes for students too, if there's any students listening, reach out to somebody else. If you're overwhelmed, if you're struggling and you're like, oh, I should be strong enough to carry this. No, you don't have to. There are people who can help you and ask, you know, walk you through things or help you understand if what you're thinking is healthy or not healthy. So that's just something personally that I had to do. I had to take advantage of, you know, there's an employee assistance program. So teachers, FYI, it's a great thing. Do it. But reaching out when you are having struggles and, you know, kind of laying down any pride or fear or anxiety about that process. That was a big growing thing for me. I like to be perceived as strong and, you know, competent. And, so actually reaching out and getting some assistance outside of my own brain was really helpful.
I had some good bonding time with my son. My oldest son is a teacher in Maine. He teaches music. And so he went online teaching before I went online teaching. So I was, you know, texting him and calling him, tell me, give me, you know, how do I do this? So we would commiserate together, and he does an amazing job, and he's very, you know, tech savvy. And has created these wonderful videos, and he's talked to me a lot about, you know, his struggles as well as his successes. So that was good.
Well, I just want to close with talk about the summer. You know, it's normally sort of a wind down period for teachers, right? I mean,
shows what you know.
You're so funny.
It wasn't supposed to be funny.
This is where it's where we all take off for Hawaii and Mexico for 3 months. Right. And yes, yeah.
That's not what I'm seeing.
No.
Well, nobody's going.
Yeah,
anywhere.
No one's going.
That's right. That's for sure. But now you're still teaching. I mean, you're still trying to create, and you're still undergoing a certain amount of stress, right? Because you're anticipating what's going to happen in September and late August.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that.
So to address perhaps some misconceptions about having the summers off, normally summers are the time. We have, personally, I sleep for a couple weeks, but then there's professional development that we do over the summer and finding new repertoire and some different things like that we do in normal times, right? So not just in COVID pandemic time, but in normal times, we're not off the whole summer.
Mm-hmm. I live with a teacher.
That's
right?
A good summer.
Go off by this.
Sorry about that, but this summer's a little different. I think we're all still doing a little bit of work. But again, I need to be purposeful about actually taking a break and doing some non-work related things over the summer.
is there a way that you all connect with your kids still through during the summer? I mean, do you find that's necessary, important to do right now?
Oh yeah, for me it's like nonstop. These kids are always always wanting to do something, or over the summer, I will usually take, a smaller group of kids, and over the summer that's where we do our dramaturgical work for researching the plays that we decided that we want to do, coming up with a fundraising scheme. We'll have a couple of club meetings, over the summer. So there's always, some constant feedback, especially with the officers in the group. And then also reaching out to, usually the summer is also when we kind of reach out later in the summer, we'll reach out to the eighth graders kind of coming up into the high school club, from the middle school club, and hopefully we can move them on up. So
what was the end of the year like for the club, the art club?
We actually didn't do a whole lot online with the art club. There's so many projects sitting in my room waiting to be finished. That was kind of a sad
end for the seniors in the club.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. These poor seniors. I feel most bad, I think, for seniors and just the fizzle of the end of the year that it was. But
I'm really glad that they did the graduation. I think, I've been a part of all five of all 5 years. I've been a part of helping with the graduation. This year, I think it was the most emotional for me and special. It was long, but it was, to me, it was so important. Yeah, it was so important, though, for them to be able to have their graduation, because there were quite a few districts that were just, that's not it. We're not doing it at all. And, just to see my seniors one more time,
Well, good luck. Have a pleasant summer. Keep doing what you do. We really appreciate what you do for our community and for our kids. And best of luck in the upcoming year.
Thank you.
Hope we find a way to resolve this and keep all our kids engaged.
That's right.
Have a splendid weekend and a good summer, all.
Thank you, Mike.
All right.
It's good to see you, Laura.